di sera scrivo a mia madre che non voglio tornare. Sto troppo bene, le dico, prepara il letto solo per Natale. Astro Virgilare, che tanto prima non voglio tornare, per quello che ho da fare faccio il militare. E non mandarmi nemmeno dei soldi, che qui non serve nemmeno verdi, tanto è uguale. Domani sera sono di guardia alla polveriera. Mi scoccia un poco a dir la verità, perché è domenica sera. Ma non ci si può rilassare, i russi possono arrivare ogni ora. Ogni ora. E se ci portano via le armi? Come facciamo la guerra, dimmi? Coi bastoni?
Ma io non lo so. Io piango e basta.
Domani c'è esercitazione di tiro col cannone. Spariamo colpi che possono arrivare fino in Giappone. Non si può provare, non si può stare a sparare in giro, in giro, in giro, in giro. Non siamo mica gli americani, che loro possono sparare gli indiani. Focco gli indiani. Non siamo mica gli americani, che loro possono sparare agli indiani. Focco gli indiani.
Welcome back to A Bold Scientist Under the Shower, my radio show broadcasting that I broadcast every second Tuesday of the month. Is about science. This month, by the way, will be the third Tuesday of the month. And today we have as a guest Marco Aiello. Expert computer scientist, expert in the magnificent world of the web, author of a very great book that we're gonna talk about it in a sec. Hi Marco, how you doing?
Hi Francesco, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know, tell us a bit about yourself. Why are you here? By the way, sorry if I interrupt you. We just listened to Vasco Rossi, is an Italian very famous singer, and the song was talks about a young kid, who a young guy who start to do the military service, and I put this track for a very important reason that we would just get in a second, thanks also to the expertise of Marco. Because our story today, or our topic today, is pretty much related, at least part of it, pretty much related to the army money. Okay, but first thing first, I'm Marco again. So tell us a little bit about you.
Thanks. So I'm a professor at the University of Stuttgart in the south of Germany. I define myself as a European nomad. I've studied in Rome, La Sapienza. That's where I got my engineering degree. Then I came here to Amsterdam to do my PhD at the UFA. After that, I went to Trento in the north of Italy. And from there to Vienna, where I got my habilitation. And then 10, 12 years in Groningen, back to the Netherlands. So I've traveled around and enjoyed academia around Europe with great pleasure.
All places were as nice, or
culturally very different, but all special in some way, and all in my heart. And I moved recently to Germany, so now I'm discovering a new place, a new culture, and I very much enjoy also this new experience. Yeah.
Oh, great! And why do you think I put this song? So what was the idea? Because actually today we're going to talk about the web. But as myself as well, I was pretty much confused about the difference between... So I know, because I'm an engineer, by the way. I was myself confused about the difference between internet and the web. So what, first of all... internet is
actually you shouldn't be worried. I hear my own colleagues often using the two words interchangeably.
Okay.
The web is an application that needs a network to work, and it is so successful that people think of it as being the same thing as the internet. To make a metaphor, you can think of the internet as like the road system, highways, small roads in towns, and so on. So it's an infrastructure. The web, you can think of as a car, something that is driving on top of this infrastructure. So the web is an application. You have a browser to look at it. You can find information with it and buy products. And it works thanks to the internet. But they're two separate things to some extent. They need each other in different ways, but they're two separate things. So often people say, oh, the web doesn't work, or this is dangerous, or the internet is broken. But the two things are actually separated, two separate things, and also have different origins.
Yeah, about the origin. But first, actually, I want to keep my traditions, because first I forgot to ask you, was being a web expert, a professor in computer science. So I was right before. Good. What's your so-called dream since your childhood?
I think rather than a dream, was a destiny. So my father was one of the first electronic engineers in Italy.
Oh, wow.
Before when he started university, there was only electrotechnic, and then they started electronics while he was studying and graduating electronic engineer. My mother was a mathematician. And they met in a computer lab, one of the first computer labs in Italy, in Pisa. And then, of course, they fell in love, and I was born. And so, to some extent, I had to continue the family tradition early on. They were, I find them, pioneers. It was the early days of computer science.
It's good that you said this word, because one of the next track is called Pioneer.
Oh, okay,
so
perfect.
Just, it was great.
Yeah, well... Computer science is a young discipline, if you look at it scientifically, compared to mathematics or geometry or physics, is absolutely a kid. So I think that people were engaging in computer research 50 years ago were really pioneers. We're still running very, very fast, but we're no longer pioneers. We know what we're doing, and we're expanding quite a lot, because we can see how much computer science, informatics, is pervading our society.
Absolutely. And we're gonna talk at the end of the radio show on.
But going back to my interest, basically, my first personal computer was 1981. Oh. I was 9 years old, and my mom got home this Texas Instrument 994A. This is a personal computer, which was compared to today a joke, but back then was a nice thing. And I could start getting used to the computer, to programming, and I enjoyed it very much. And from there, it was my sort of Lego, where you could build things and make them happen. And I enjoyed it ever since. I'm not sure... The fact that I want to go to academia, but I was pretty sure that computer science was something I want to be involved in.
Oh, great. Predestined.
Yeah.
Going back on track. So you said, before I interrupted you to ask you about your childhood dream, that internet and web, they have two completely different history or origin, you said. And this is linked exactly to the first track of Vasco Rossi. What is the origin of the internet?
Yeah, so the internet you can trace back to a large DARPA project, that is the American Defense Project. It is also much older than the web, so we are talking about the 60s, and basically there was a tender to build an infrastructure for telecommunication among computers, which back then were huge, very expensive machines. I report a little bit about the history of the internet in my book, but what is interesting to note is that some companies were skeptical and saying, no, this thing is not going to work. We will pull out. We will not even make an offer for this tender. And in the end, it did work, and it expanded quite rapidly. So it was a large effort. There were many people involved. Some had a prominent role, and there was a lot of money coming from the defense government at the beginning.
So a lot of companies thought that it wouldn't work because they didn't think that thing could be shared, or because it was too expensive, or because
it was the technical problems. They thought the kind of technology you wanted to use wasn't mature. They thought it would cost too much. I mean, a computer back then was something like €1 million euros of today. So you cannot think of putting a little router and sending around messages. A number of companies did consider it not a feasible solution and not something to pursue economically. And perhaps they were right, because it took 30 years to actually make it really profitable and interesting for a larger public. But it was quite a pioneer work again.
Yeah. What about the web? This what about this car in your metaphor?
So the web comes much later. We're talking about late 80s, early 90s. And it doesn't come from a consortium or a large project. Rather, it comes from a small project of one person. And this person is Tim Berners-Lee, which is a scientist at CERN in Switzerland, at the Nuclear Research Agency. And he has a need to systematize information at CERN to help the researchers access the information. And he's fond of hypertextuality, and he comes up with his proposal. And then he is very active in sharing his idea and having other people develop with him, and it becomes quite successful. But it's a small hobby project which just blew up into an incredibly large and successful system 30 years later.
Oh, incredible. So, was internet already existing when...
Yes. So basically, the original project of DARPA was then brought to a larger number of actors, and Europeans research centers starting to join. I think, if I remember right, CWI here in Amsterdam was one of the first to actually be connected, and then at some point it became open access, so everybody could actually access this infrastructure. And by the end of the 80s, it is an infrastructure which is available at CERN. It's available at many universities across the world, and then. People were already using mail. They were already using FTP, which is a protocol for exchanging files. They were remotely connecting between machines. So the infrastructure was there, and it was already, people in academia were used to it, especially scientist and computer scientist. And the web was a very successful system, but at the same time, in that moment, not the only one.
Yep. I stop you here because because this is so also to create a little bit of suspense.
Sure.
Because now we're gonna go with the second track. This is Renato Zero with Rete d'Oro, and obviously the title is not by chance, because Rete d'Oro in English, translated in English, is the Golden Web.
D'oro adesso ha pescato noi, dolci prede peccatori mai. Noi di questo mare, noi la sola verità, un azzurro complice è il segreto che ci unirà. Vuoi, c'è una stella in cielo e giura non ci tradirà mai. Vuoi, lasciami scoprire dove vanno i sogni tuoi. Io non sono ricco, un nome è tutto quel che ho, ma il mio corpo è forte e tu sei fiore, ti proteggerò. Mentre il tempo dolce piano ci cancellerà dalle ombre della notte, un'altra luce ci raccoglierà. Vuoi, dove tu sarai poesia.
Welcome back to the second part of the Bold Scientist Under a Shower. We are here tonight with Marco Aiello, professor in computer science in Stuttgart. So we start with giving you a little bit of definition about internet, the web, and now we actually so we Marco just before the end of the first part just mentioned the existence of other, or at least the web was not the only car, following his metaphor, within this highway of the internet, but there were other systems. So the previous track, the one we listened to, was called the Golden Web, probably because the web is the only one that made it. Why the other systems? First of all, which are those other systems that competed with the web? Why they were not so golden, let's say?
That's a very interesting question. So I think it was a quite fervent time in that moment. Hypertextuality, which was defined in the 60s, had become more of a mainstream topic. There were even conferences, European conferences, American conference on hypertextuality. And then there was a number of systems that were implementing it in many different ways. One which was, I think, a direct...
For people that don't know what hypertextuality is,
Yeah, absolutely. So basically is the idea that you follow some text and then you can jump somewhere else. So when you have a link on a web page, you follow the link and then you're not reading the full page in normal or in sequential order.
Thanks a lot.
Of course. And basically, there were more systems that were trying to exploit this idea. Together with the web, one was Gopher. Gopher was a project coming from an American university, and it was also implemented so you could access, for instance, a library, or you could access other kind of information. And it's interesting that the web and Gopher were at the same time, and one made and one not. And one possible explanation for this is the business model. So Gopher had the idea that they would license the technology, and university who wanted to use it had to pay a license fee. At the same time, the web was free, and you could expand it, you could write your own piece of software for it, you can use it as an information repository.
So everyone could collaborate in the web?
You could collaborate, and you could just get the specification, go home, and build your own component. You could build your browser, you could build your server, so it was fully specified. And Tim Berners-Lee did a great thing in making it open source very early. So he convinced the managers at CERN to actually release this technology to the world at no cost. And this was a very important move for the success of the web, and a very wise move. There were other systems. Another one which I'd like to mention is HyperCard. HyperCard was a software that came bundled in the Macintosh. And it also had hypertextuality as its core. And the thing that it had that was quite unique at the time was that you could compute inside these pages. So they were not pages, they were called cards. And inside a card, you could have things that dynamically change, something that we're used to on the web of these days, but late 80s was quite advanced. So the web had features of simplicity and a model of open access and a free and liberty of expanding that were unique. And I think there's a lot of the success of it that has to do with this. I also have to say that there were systems were not competing with the web, but were pre-existing. So there's a very famous system which was demoed in 1968, which is called the online system. And there is the first time that the computer science world saw a Windows-based system with hypertextual features. There was a demo at a conference in the United States, which is still known as the mother of all demos. It was 1 hour demo, impressive. You can find the whole demo. It's about an hour on YouTube. And if you look at it, it is obvious. It's obvious because with today's technology, we recognize everything we're doing today. But in 1968 was the first time ever that people had saw such a system. Oh my God. When people were still working with punch cards and were still working with very simple terminals, this guy, Douglas Engelbart, which was the head of that project, came on stage and actually remotely showed a system with cut and paste, a mouse, a pointer, and video conferencing it to a large audience. So for sure, the web owes a lot to something like the online system of 1968.
But so I normally in everyday life, I used to think that there's always a compensation in things, meaning that if something is very simple and is very usable, have some downside as much as the other more complex that you were describing should have some good things. I mean, why you explain why for its simplicity, for the fact that it was open source, but did the other system had some advantage, some crucial, significant advantage that probably the web lack?
Let me take it from a little bit different angle.
Yeah.
The web was simple and successful. That's no doubts about that. At the same time, the web was so simple that so many things had to be fixed. So in my book, I actually make an analysis of the evolution of the web and say, look, all the things that we had to adjust. I call these patches because we were patching this original design of the web for features that were not there. They were not thought of because it was a simple design. I go around and give talks about this book, and almost every time I get someone after the talk coming to me and says, but it could only be invented by an amateur. The web could only be an amateur because otherwise it would have been over-designed like other system. Xanado is a good example of that. And it wouldn't have made it.
I stop you here. You are a great guest because you always say the right word to make, hopefully, our audience very curious. Because this is exactly what our next part will be. And indeed, we're going to talk about the a bit more profoundly, a bit more deeply about the book of Marco, entitled, indeed, as he was kind of mentioning, The Web Was Done by Amateurs. But we're going to talk about it in a while. Before I'm going to, hopefully you're going to enjoy this song from Sondre Lerche, a Swedish artist, which is also linked to the fact that most of the scientists, computer scientists you mentioned, won this Nobel Prize. I mean, the equivalent or corresponding of the Nobel Prize for computer science. But we're gonna talk about this later. And the song, as already announced before, is called Pioneer.
I say this even though
I'm almost sure by now you know.
Welcome back to the Bold Scientist Under the Shower. We, as every time, we thank Radio Onda Italiana that every time give us the honor to host our radio show. We are here with Marco Aiello, and we're just talking about the great, as I call it before, golden web of the web. He also wrote a book about it called The Web Was Done by Amateurs. You were inspired by someone?
Yes. So actually, this is not my sentence, it's a sentence of Alan Kay. Alan Kay was really a pioneer. He is a pioneer, still alive. And he is someone who envisioned personal computing and a way of building programs, which we still use today, back in the 60s. So he was definitely a pioneer. In 2003, he was honored by the ACM Turing Award, which is basically what the computer scientist the maximum award they can aspire to, and we consider it our Nobel Prize, if you wish. And before I say more about Alan Kay, let me also say that this prize was something that also Tim Berners-Lee received last year to honor his contribution with the web. And also Douglas Engelbart, which I mentioned before with his Mother of All Demo, received about 3 years ago.
Turing was the inventor of computer, right?
Turing was
there was a nice movie. I watched it. Yes, very nice movie.
Very nice movie. Very nice movie. Yeah. He was a mathematician and he envisioned a lot of things about computing and basically the models of the basic universal model of computation. So what is called Turing machine also today. So he was an incredible scientist. He's also one of the people who defined gave a definition of artificial intelligence. He was talking about machine intelligence back at his time, but he basically defined what artificial intelligence is.
And once again, it was a military project. Actually, apparently, I mean, according to the movie, thanks to his machine, the aliens won the. Second World War.
He had a crucial contribution to understanding how to break the encrypted message of the enemy, and that was very important for winning the war. One of a major contribution for sure. So yeah, to honor Alan Turing, that's how the prize, the most prestigious prize you can win in computer science is. And as I said, Alan Kay is one that did win this award, and is someone who speaks his mind very freely. And in an interview 5 years ago,
Of course, is so the web is main competitor. So
competitor to what?
To his system.
No.
It was not the inventor of this 68.
No. That was Douglas Engelbart.
Okay, sorry.
That's another generation.
Sorry.
But the interesting thing is that Alan Kay was in the audience of that demo in 1968.
Okay.
He was a young, I think he had just finished his PhD. He goes to this conference and he's absolutely mesmerized by this demo. And then goes on to work for a research center, Xerox PARC in Silicon Valley. And he's part of a number of projects which try to build that system. And a lot of our modern computers, our modern personal computers, Windows-based, come from the research lab where he was, and in turn from this mother of all demos.
Okay.
But so he's someone who speaks his mind, and he can do it because he absolutely has contributed so much to our discipline. And 5 years ago, he released an interview to Dr. Dobbs Journal, and he said something that I found astonishing at the point. He said, the internet is so beautiful. It's like a natural resource. It's like the Pacific Ocean. It just scales naturally. And then he says, the web in comparison is a joke. The web was done by amateurs. And you know, it stayed with me. It stayed in my mind for a while. And then at some point, he's right. It was done by amateurs. And you can see it. Because for 30 years, we had to fix things here and there.
So you, just out of curiosity, you never thought about it before. So you take the web for granted or something?
No. I mean, the web came in my lifetime, so it's something that I've seen from nothing, and I was an early user, if you wish, and I started contributing to it in about 1985. I already was active on it, but after reading that sentence, it was like it's right. I've been working to fix these these problems for the last 3 years of my life. And he's quite critical because he does not like the fact that the web has loosely formatted text, is not well defined what an interaction between two components is. So he would have liked to see a system which was with a clean design, which is his style. He likes clean design, which you can understand what's going on. And he sees this thing called the web, which is very successful, and it has a lot of issues. So that sentence triggered me to actually reflect and say, let's see if he's right and why he's right. Mm. And then I went back and looked at the history and evolution of the web. And there's a number of reasons for which one can say, yes, it was done by amateurs. And there's a number of things you say, yes, over the last 30 years, we've been fixing this hypertextual system to bring it towards a computational system. The example, the basic example is cookies. Cookies we still use today. You go on a web page, you get the thing, do you want to accept the cookies? Basically, the cookies came very early in the web history. The first time that a company said, we want to do e-commerce, we want to sell products on the web.
So can you just define a little bit briefly what a cookie is?
So a cookie is a little bit of information that the person, the company who's giving you a service wants to put on your machine. It does that so it can know the state of your machine. So you're buying something, it has to know that it's you as a user, that you've selected a specific item that you want to buy, like a book, and then you will pay for the book that you selected. Mm-hmm. And the original web had no provision for this because technically it's called stateless. It was a stateless system. You went from one page to another independently of your search history or your browsing history. Mm-hmm. So it was very hard to do something like a session in which you choose something, you pay for it, and you get a confirmation of delivery. So cookies come actually from a customer of Netscape, 1994, if I'm not mistaken. And basically we still have it more or less as it was defined in 1994, because we still need it. And there's more examples, so JavaScript, Java, Flash. So all patches, all things we had to put on top of the web because we needed to have more capabilities. Things which were, I think, not envisioned when it was designed. And in case criticism is the web of today is still not a well-defined computational infrastructure. We're using it as such. Today, the web is used as by humans and by software robots, by systems that need to do operations on behalf of humans or just need to acquire information. But it's still not a well-designed computational infrastructure.
So actually, could those other systems be more ready for all those new developments? So could it be easier changed compared to the web?
Well, I think that each one of the other systems which were competing or proceeding, each one had a special feature. I don't think there was one which was globally better, but rather each one had something which was interesting. So Xanadu, which is 1960, had a very good definition of what an hypertextual system is. Basically, links had to be followable both ways. You could you had to be able to trace back a link. You had a notion of a transclusion, which meant a piece of text is actually borrowed from another piece of text. And in the proposal of Xanadu, there was even a copyright and a micropayments to take account that you were taking text from somebody else. So Xanadu, for instance, from the hypertextual point of view, has a very nice and clean design. But from the computation, also did not have anything relevant. HyperCard had a much better model of a notion of a state, a notion of a computation tied to the navigation of it as a system. At the same time, had nothing about distribution and connection and networking. Gopher was pretty much similar to the web in many aspects. So I don't think there was one better system. Rather, there were features and things that were designed in a careful way in many other systems. I do think that the web came in the right moment. It was in the right moment, the right place. And then the great effort of Tim Berners-Lee to make it popular, successful, open, gave it that final boost. And we can see, if you look at the growth of the web over the last 30 years, next year we're celebrating 30 years of the web, it has been exponential ever since. The exponential growth has slowed down a little bit recently, but it's still an exponential growth. So we went from 5 pages in 1989 to, I think now we're over the billion pages.
Oh, God. So I find as nice as controversial this title. Yeah. Just out of curiosity, did you have problems publishing the book just for this very controversial title?
I wouldn't say problems, but for sure some publisher were a little bit careful about the title. So I did approach some, and some were a little bit saying this is not the type of text that we usually publish. But in the end, I went to Springer with my idea, and they were enthusiastic, so they were not too afraid about the title, and they understood the message of this book, which is a popular science book.
Exactly. So what the book is about, Marco? Our audience, people that are listening to us, can understand better by reading your book?
So the book has a first historical part. So the first historical part, I'm trying to put back all the components that brought us to the web of today and say, okay, what was there? What happened to the internet? How did the internet evolve? How far was the internet when the web appeared? Then I tried to look at other systems before the web, like, as I mentioned, online system, Xanadu and so on, the ones competing with the web. And this is the first part of the book. So we can reconstruct the history, which otherwise in literature is a bit scattered here and there. And then the second part is more looking at evolution. It's like, how do we start from a very simple web with a very simple protocol attached to it to a massive computational system as you have today? And I mentioned this notion of patching it, of bringing new ideas, of improving it, which is a constant evolution. And the final part of the book, I try to understand and think of what made it successful? What makes a system successful? So part of my reflection is to try to understand is there a competition, there's a tension, if there's a need for a system, what makes one win and prevail over the other? Mm. And I cannot say I have a final answer, but I have a number of indicators which have definitely played in favor of the web. So it was great fun to write this book, because it forced me to read back and look at the history. I also found that some of the things I thought I knew were not completely correct. And then perhaps can be also generalized. So say, a system can be successful when it comes at the right time. It is simple, it's adoptable. Yep. There's a huge community behind the web. The amount of people who contribute both from the content side And from the technical side, it's astonishing. It's a global phenomenon. And this is essential for the web as it is and how we use it.
Thank you very much, Marco. Now we're going to proceed with the next song, which is actually a duet between B.B. King and Eric Clapton. Clapton, a very famous song, actually, the most famous, probably, song from B.B. King. The Thrill Is Gone.
All right.
I'm dying. I don't want to fade it out, but yeah, we have to. Okay, this was The Thrill Is Gone from B.B. King, but in this particular version was together with Eric Clapton. Is it gone, The Thrill, Marco? Of the web, of course. That's what we are talking about. So what is, so in other words, what is the future? Are there problem? So are people afraid? Are software afraid about the web?
So I'm not sure the thrill is gone, but for sure there's some concerns. You should just read the media. You find more often discussion about, oh, what about privacy? People know so much about other people, what they're doing, what their taste is, and so on. So clearly there's more concern and more awareness of what it means to use an infrastructure like the web. And not only use, also abuse. Because we had examples in the past how this infrastructure had been abused for instance, political reasons, economic reasons, and so on. So for sure there is a concern that hinders the thrill with the web. In addition, we also see a trend in which more and more of the web is actually now channeled through applications, through apps through your phone. So if in the old days you would open a browser and just go from one web page to another, now you have a rich set of application of apps on your phone or your other devices that you use. This is a bit of a concern because it means that this free open system network like the web is now to some extent controlled by the companies who control those apps. And the two strongest players here are Google with its Play Store and Apple with its App Store. Basically, they can decide which application gets published and which not. They have a saying in the ranking of this application. So to some extent, they suggest which applications should be favorable or most likely to be downloaded. So Tim Berners-Lee himself has actually manifested worrisome about this phenomenon because the big companies are taking over to some extent. So the thrill is not gone, but we have to be careful in how the web evolves and how the future is used, because these concerns about privacy and opinion manipulation are absolutely legitimate. There is right concerns about this.
All right, so you scare me a bit, Marco. So actually this freedom, open source, everything, brothers and sisters, now it's not anymore. I mean, this is probably
I don't think that the problem is in the open sources. Is more
in the
use that people try to exploit a system because the economic values at stake are really high.
Yeah.
So of course there's huge money to be made and huge advantages to be taken. When you can vehicle information to a billion people potentially, well, that's a lot of people. Yeah. You can try to convince of something. Yeah.
So the web has to change somehow, has to take
it's an evolving system. It's an evolving system. If you look at it through the years, it has changed incredibly. At some point, we were talking about web 2.0, like social web. These days, it's more a computational web. So it is something that it changes one year from the other. The future evolution is not clear what it will be, but it will evolve. That's the only thing I can say safely. It will be different. Our information system, the system we use, need an information infrastructure. If you think of the personal assistants of today, Alexa, Echo, Siri, they need the web to acquire information, to find a flight for you, find a train, find information about a concert, find a product that you want to buy, connect to some device that you have in your home. So that infrastructure has to be there. But what it will look like is not clear. Maybe it will not be an hypertextual system anymore. It is likely that we will interact with whatever future web we will have much less in terms of a window inside a computer, a point and click or touch and click, and much more, for instance, by voice, by just talking and expressing our queries or requests by voice. So I do believe that we will have an infrastructure, a web-like infrastructure, with information provided by many, many different parties. And I do believe that we will access it in a multimodal way, even more than what we're doing today. And we will be doing that both as humans and both as pieces of software. So basically software assistants, robotic assistants, that will use the web to do services, useful services, hopefully, to us users.
Thank you very much, Marco. It was a great journey. Unfortunately, the time is up, so we have to conclude, and we were gonna do it with this song called "The Social Network." You talk about the web 2.0 and the social networks, social platform, and this is a song by Davide Di Rosolini, which will be our guest in December or January. Is also a friend of mine who came last year already. It was super fun. I thank you very, very much, Marco. Was great. You came from actually Stuttgart. Thank you very much. Hopefully, I'm gonna see you again with your new book. I don't know, probably.
thank you but, for having me.
So I would warmly suggest the book of Marco Aiello. The Web Was Done by Amateurs. And see you next time, Marco. Bye. Thanks again to Radio Onda Italiana for hosting us once again. Bye and see you next month.
Di solito non accetto mai quasi tutte le richieste d'amicizia. E beh certo, devo dire che con te è stato diverso, per via della tua bellezza. Ho guardato le immagini del tuo profilo, io più cliccavo e più mi innamoravo. Ti piace farti tutte le foto dall'alto, con qualche fotoritocco ed il muso così. Ma poi ho letto lavora presso ospedale. Beh certo ci credo poverina, sarà per via di quella paralisi facciale. Ti ho scritto mi dispiace come commento, ma tu hai messo mi piace ed io tutto contento. Poi è iniziato l'amore, il nostro amore. E chattare come dei coglioni per 5-6 ore. Il nostro amore è un social network nato, vissuto, è morto tutto su Facebook. Il nostro amore è una relazione complicata, ma fidati che solo perché non ti ho ancora incontrata. E anche se adesso siamo fidanzati ufficialmente, tu dimmi come cacchio faccio via chat a toccarti le tere, tere, tere. Poi un giorno finalmente ho pubblicato la foto dei miei galli alla mano. Ti ho taggato, mi hai scritto sì, mi sa che è il caso che usciamo. Ma l'appuntamento tu non sei venuta ed una